May God's words alone be spoken. May God's words alone be heard. Amen. Oh Lord, it's hard to be humble when you're perfect in every way. Y'all don't remember that, do you? Maybe I'm the only one that remembers Mac Davis, a country western crossover singer, and that song from 1980. Great fun. And I think our Pharisee in the gospel today might have sung it too, had country western been a popular genre of music in the ancient Near East. Now the thing about the Gospel of Luke is that just when you think you know what Jesus is up to, you're likely heading down a rabbit hole. We're nearing the end of the Luke year, and we've learned a few things about Jesus in this author's mind. Just when you think you understand him, he flips over your expectations. Luke is a gospel of reversals. It's my favorite. And it's not for those without a sense of adventure and an ability to withstand having your worldview flipped upside down. So fasten your seatbelts, folks, because Jesus is at it again. In the gospel, Jesus tells the story of two men. One is a Pharisee. The other is a tax collector. You couldn't have two more different people in terms of their regard in their community. One is a learned temple scholar, a leader of the faithful, revered in town. And the other, an agent of oppression, doing the work of the empire and profiting off the tax payments. A man reviled in town. Now both went to the temple to pray, and the gospel says the Pharisee, standing by himself, was praying, God, I thank you that I'm not like the other people, thieves and rogues and adulterers, or even this tax collector. I fast twice a week. I give a tenth of my income. Oh Lord, it's hard to be humble when you're perfect in every way. Okay, that's Mac Davis again, but I just couldn't help myself. The tax collector now is standing far off, and he couldn't even look up to heaven, but was beating his breast and saying, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. And then Jesus says, I tell you, this man went down to his home justified rather than the other. For all who exalt themselves will be humbled, and all who humble themselves will be exalted. And the trap is set. And it's a paradoxical trap, too. Because the moment we say to ourselves, thank God I am not like that Pharisee, the trap is sprung and we just got caught in it. But wait, wasn't that the point? Are we not to be more like the tax collector and less like the Pharisee? Isn't that what Jesus meant when he ended the parable saying, for all who exalt themselves will be humbled, but all who humble themselves will be exalted? Yes. And no. Okay. But at least we can be like the tax collector. Safe. Right? Wrong. I told you to fasten your seatbelts. See, while the tax collector seems to be a model of humility, like the Pharisee, he makes the whole prayer all about himself. Listen to the words each of them use. The Pharisee says, I this and I that, and the tax collector beats his breast and says, be merciful to me, a sinner. Both are standing or kneeling in prayer, which should be a conversation with God. And yet, they are telling God about themselves. One is judging the other, and one is judging themselves. And both of these folks have left God out of the conversation entirely. In other words, just when we think we are humble, we're not. Sorry, Mac Davis. So if we aren't to be like either of these two, then why did Jesus use this parable? Well, as I said before, the Luke and Jesus really seems to like these paradoxical twists. Perhaps it's because his followers tended from time to time to think they were the be-all, end-all of Galilee. Or perhaps Jesus is warning us not to talk as the author of 2 Timothy in the passage today, who proclaimed, I have fought the good fight, I have finished the race, I have kept the faith. From now on, there is reserved for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will give me on that day. Did anybody else find it was kind of fascinating to have this side by side with the gospel today? Seriously, am I the only one? Or perhaps Jesus was warning us of something that could ensnare us unawares, as it had both the Pharisee and the tax collector. The idea that it's all about us. See, God is focused on relationship. God to us, us to God, and us to one another. See, it isn't that the Pharisee wasn't righteous. He was. He was. And it wasn't that the tax collector wasn't a sinner. He was. Well, so was the Pharisee, and so were all of us. Sin is the separation from God. But here's the paradoxical twist. We cannot be reconciled to God if we're not in relationship with one another. There cannot be love of God outside of love of neighbor and self, too. Right relationship with God, justification in a biblical sense, is impossible to do alone. Even if we lived on some remote island without any other human, all of that creation on the island is of God. To be in right relationship means to all of our all of humanity, our neighbors, and to all of creation too. And that's where we fall into the trap. Because this faith stuff can't be done on our own. It isn't enough to be spiritual beings communing with God all on our lonesome. We're born spiritual beings, all of us. And from the moment we're born, God is calling us into relationship with her and with one another. In the words of one commentator I saw this week, David Lose, the temptation, of course, is to allow this parable to devolve into a predictable and bland morality tale. Be humble, but to do so is to miss the bite of this compact and potent story. The Pharisee is righteous, make no mistake, but he has bought his righteousness at the cost of relationship. Relationship with God, who stands only as the divine validator of his own goodness, and relationship with any and perhaps all others whom he deems contemptible. You see, the trap we fall into is thinking that this parable is about humility. It's not. It's a parable about two people isolated by their own choice, judging themselves worthy or unworthy and leaving God out of it. And the church throughout history seems to have gotten caught in the trap too. Too often the church has been, as the Pharisee, judging others and leaving in its wake a host of tax collectors, people who beat themselves up, feel unworthy of God's grace. Or we look down on our noses at other faith traditions, denominations, or even others in the same denomination as not doing this God thing the right way. It's like a cartoon I use in my Take Back the Bible class for the LGBT community. It shows a Sunday school teacher and a class of little ones, little stick figures. And the Sunday school teacher is pointing to a big chart behind him, and on the far left is the cross. Jesus dies and is risen. And then from that point is a whole bunch of other lines spread out as denominations tended to split over the centuries. And he points to this one little line way over to the far right and says, "That's where we got the Bible right." And the little kid in the class says, "Jesus is so lucky to have us." In the immortal words of Charlie Brown, good grief. We love to judge, don't we? We seem to have just enough insecurity that we measure our own worth by measuring the worth of others, as the Pharisee did. It's like we make life a big competition where there are winners and losers. And in the church, that can be a competition to show who gets this Christian thing right. Now, there's a story I heard once about a rivalry between the people of Shively Christian Church and their counterparts at Shively Baptist. The competition was especially fierce when they played softball. And one week, Pastor Stone of the Shively Christian Church divided the youth into groups and instructed them to go out and find a practical way to be servants. He wanted them to be Jesus in their community for 2 hours. He challenged them, if Jesus were here, what would he do? 2 hours later, the kids returned to report on their activities. One bunch had done yard work for an elderly man. Another had treated several widows from their church with ice cream treats. Another group brought a get well card to a hospitalized church member. And yet another went Christmas caroling at a nursing home, even though it was mid-August. I like that group. But when the fifth group reported on their activity, everyone else groaned. This group went to the pastor of their rival church, Shively Baptist, and asked him if he knew anyone who needed help. And the pastor sent them to the home of an elderly woman who needed help with yard work. And they mowed, and they raked, and they trimmed the hedges. And as they were leaving, the woman called them together and thanked them. "You kids at Shively Baptist are always coming to our rescue," she told them. "Shively Baptist," Pastor Stone interrupted. "I sure hope you set her straight and told her you were from Shively Christian Church." "Why, no, we didn't. We didn't think it mattered." It really didn't matter. Those kids, perhaps without really realizing it, taught their pastor a valuable lesson. I have to tell you, that happens a lot when it comes to youth groups and pastors. Taught a valuable lesson about relationship with God and one another. And that's all that matters. And yet for most of us, it's not an easy thing to do, is it? Especially when the other, that neighbor we're called to love, stands for everything we would spend our lifetime fighting against. Now last week at the Theology on Tap, the topic was, "This election is trying my faith, a dialogue on politics and loving our neighbor." Now, to be sure this was a timely topic, and also to be sure this election has worn us out, so much so that we had a small turnout for it this month. But in the discussion we had, one theme seemed to emerge, that politics, as important as it may be, is not as important as staying in relationship with one another. So many people have had to defriend people on Facebook or have been defriended themselves. You all know what I'm talking about? Did you know that friending, by the way, has become a verb in our dictionary? You can be friended or defriended. This has happened to a lot of folks. And then others, in the interest of preserving family peace, refuse to engage in any discussion about the election at all. And I think that's a good thing. Perhaps we all need a reset on November 9th, no matter the outcome. See, from the point of view of God, there are no states, or countries for that matter. All these borders that we've created, usually by killing one another, to God, everyone all over the world, everyone is beloved. When we consider the world from the point of view of God, politics, governments, companies, all the workings of humanity, it all becomes just as it should be, small in light of the larger picture, that each of us is a brother and sister to everyone else. Republicans and Democrats, liberals and conservatives, gay and straight, men and women, the people of the U.S. and people of countries all over the world. That's the macro view. And like looking up at the stars at night and the vastness of space, it can humble us to the core. But what does it mean for each of us here in the pews? What is Jesus telling us through this parable to do? When you get up at the peace today, look at one another. Really look at one another, at your brother and sister, and see the face of Christ in them. Be humbled by that presence and by the reality that they are seeing that in you too. Jesus didn't go into the temple and beat himself up, nor did he stand in the middle of it and claim how fabulously wonderful he is. He could have. God became incarnate, walked among us, not to cast judgment, but to show us how to live in right relationship with one another and with God. That's the power of the cross. Not as some sort of invitation to torture, but as an acknowledgement that the greatest love is the one that God has for each of us. Can we not offer one another the smallest amount of love in return? Must it always be conditional on liking the other's worldview? We can never be in the fullness of relationship with God if we are not in right relationship with others. And those others cannot be just those who think, look, act, love, or vote like we do. This is a time in our country, in the world, where we have an important role to play as followers of Christ. We can choose to keep coming here and pray like the Pharisee or beat ourselves up like the tax collector, but that is not what faith is all about. Faith is about being out in the world and offering the healing power of prayer and proclaiming that we never, ever can be fully alive when any of our brothers and sisters are demeaned, oppressed, forgotten, or marginalized. For as any suffers and we stay silent, it is as though we ourselves are the cause of their suffering. The trap of this parable is to stay in the temple and point fingers. The trap of this parable is that we usually are some form of both Pharisee and tax collector as we move through our lives, whether we realize it or not. The trap of this parable is a paradox. The moment we see ourselves as sinner or saint, we are casting judgment and not in right relationship with God. On the way out of the trap, keep the focus on God, not on ourselves. It isn't about the Pharisee or the tax collector, not really. It's about remembering that God is alive and at work in our lives, and to pray for guidance and grace to live as God would have us live, to love as Christ loved us, and to never be concerned with how we measure up, but how we live in relationship with our brothers and sisters and all of God's creation. It isn't easy. And we will fail. That's why our confession and absolution is so important. Did you ever really notice the words of our confession? It isn't about rattling off a list of things we got wrong, is it? It's all about relationship. Most merciful God, we confess that we have sinned against you in thought, word, and deed, by what we have done and by what we have left undone. We have not loved you with our whole heart. And we have not loved our neighbors as ourselves. We are truly sorry. It's always about relationship with God and with one another. Now, as we do each week of our stewardship campaign, you'll receive a gift blessed at the altar. And today it is a palm-sized olive wood cross. Keep that in your pocket or your car or your desk. And from time to time, let it rest in your hand and consider what humility and great love looks like. Love for you, love for your neighbor, love that never ends. Love that asks only that you seek a relationship with the one who loved you before you were born and with all the other children of God all over the world. And that, my friends, is the key to it all. The way out of the trap we set for ourselves. And oh yes, we are the ones who laid the trap in the first place. The ultimate paradox, isn't it? The way out isn't to beat ourselves up, but to open ourselves up. Because we can't love without being open, can we? The way out of the trap of humanity and into the life we were born to live is to walk humbly in love as Christ loved us. The love that keeps us in right relationship with God, with one another, and with ourselves. The love that will always set us free. Amen.